Backseat Producers, episode number 285, a chat with T. Morris about Man of Steel and its sequel. This is Tony.
And this is T.
And T is joining us as a backseat producer tonight. T, it's been a little while.
It has been, hasn't it, man? Yeah. You'd be amazed how many people we still talk about that 100 movies in 100 minutes, man.
it came up not too long ago in conversation.
I tell you right now, I'm racking up some movies for the 200 and 200. I'm ready for that.
Well, we've already passed episode 200.
Oh, dang it.
We are careening towards episode 300.
Oh, jeez.
If the pace holds either right at the end of this year or just into 2014, we'll be releasing episode 300.
Well, I don't know if you'd want 300 and 300, but maybe 300 and 100, I could give that a shot.
300 and 300.
That would be an epic show.
we've had one five-hour-long show before. Yeah. You weren't on it. That was not one you were on. You were on a
I was 3.5 hours.
It was like 3.5, yeah. Yeah, that was the episode with Pip, and we talked about The Dark Knight Return,
We talked about a lot of stuff. We were promoting the Double Trouble 888, yep. And we just kept talking. And we kept talking, and it just rolled. It was very kinetic. I loved it. It was
talking
great times.
And laughing. It was. Yes. I remember a lot of laughing.
Yes, there was.
It was a good time. And in fact, one part of the discussion that night was The Dark Knight.
Yes.
That had just come out, and we were talking about that. And
now, it was The Dark Knight. That was the one that had just come out. Yeah, because it was 2008.
Yeah.
So it wasn't Batman Begins. It was Dark Knight.
It was Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm. And now we're here to talk about The Dark Knight once again.
Yeah.
Or as the interwebs has been calling it, the Bat Affleck.
Oh.
I know.
That's
I know.
Terrible name.
Yeah. Okay, so let's – obviously, apart from Miley Cyrus, which I'm sure Ben Affleck was very thankful for, as your listeners probably know, Ben Affleck was cast as Batman in the upcoming Zack Snyder Man of Steel 2. And the interwebs melted down. And I think my favorite graphic that I've seen on Facebook about it is that image of Heath Ledger as the Joker. Mm-hmm. And it says, people are bombed in Syria and nobody cares. Ben Affleck gets cast as Batman and everyone loses their minds.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And then you extended an invite for me to come on the show and talk a little bit about my defense. My cheese is standing pretty. I wouldn't say it's standing alone, but it is one of the few voices that is stepping up in an overwhelmingly positive way, as if to say, this is not going to suck.
I am in complete agreement with you.
So, I guess where do we begin? Where to begin, with Ben?
I think a good place to begin is to try to understand what the argument against Ben is, because you and I think are of a fairly similar mindset, and we're gonna defend him. But I think it's important to understand why people might look at him and say, "What are you thinking?"
Yeah, and I think the and I'm cheating here a little bit. I'm pulling up my IMDb.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because one of the things people have got to understand.
I may have it up already. Also,
yeah. one of the things that I think people need to understand is that. When people say Ben Affleck, and this I think is very limiting for people to do this, is they go, okay, Ben Affleck, you know, and the first thing they think of is Gisli. And the second thing that they think of is, oh yeah, Ben Affleck. He was also in. He also dated J-Lo. Mm-hmm. And okay, you know what? Yes, he did. He did that.
Some of the other things they point to and snicker. One is Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Pearl Harbor. And the other one is, of course, Daredevil.
Daredevil.
Now we can also talk a little bit about Daredevil.
Sure. Absolutely.
So okay. So but first let's go back even further. I mean, first off, Ben Affleck. I'm looking at his filmography right now as an actor, and he's been working since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He's been working since 81. He's done everything from after school specials to, you know, to comic book movies. And you look at all the different, you know, and he's also got some street cred because he's done a lot of films and he's on pretty good terms with Kevin Smith, at least last time I checked.
Ben Affleck was the bombs in Phantom, yo.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
That being a line from
Will Wheaton's Twitter feed, which I found a little.
No, that was Will Wheaton stole that from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh crap! Then you know what? I got to go onto my Facebook feed and apologize to Will Wheaton because I took that as Will Wheaton making a cheap shot at Ben Affleck.
No, that was a joke. It was
This shows you how incredibly unhip I really am. I mean, really, I have not seen Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and I know it's on that list.
Mm-hmm.
And that list I'm chipping away at. I finally saw The Big Lebowski.
Oh.
I finally saw it like 2 months ago. And I went, wow, no wonder people have been saying they need me to see this movie.
Sure.
So I know Jay and Silent Bob. It'll probably be one that I have to go. I had no idea that was a line. I thought Will Wheaton was just being a jerk. So
nope. That was Jay of Jay and Silent Bob's said that because they said that you'll have to see the movie. In context, it's hilarious.
I'm sure. Because isn't Ben Affleck? He's in it. He doesn't play Ben Affleck.
He both plays a character from a previous Kevin Smith movie because he was in. So just to give a little bit of his Kevin Smith filmography, he was first in Mallrats. Then he was in Chasing Amy.
Right.
He was in Dogma. Right. And he was in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And then when they kind of ended the View Askew universe, he was in Jersey Girl.
Right.
Which a lot of people pan. Personally, I think it's one of Kevin Smith's best movies and is a great performance by Ben Affleck.
So let's go on ahead and let's go even further with the whole Michael Bay connection.
Sure.
As we know, Ben Affleck, since we mentioned Phantoms, and I'm going to try to make my peace with Will Wheaton here. So he was in Phantoms, and, you know, that was pretty much a critical flop. And then there was Armageddon,
mm-hmm.
and he was in that. And that movie is, you know, it's a typical Michael Bay, you know, screw science. I'm going to make a giant rock video for two hours, which, you know, even with, you know, people go, oh yeah, and he was terrible in Armageddon. All right, let's also talk a little bit about who else was in Armageddon. Steve Buscemi was in Armageddon, okay? Bruce Willis was in Armageddon.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Armageddon. Billy Bob Thornton, Armageddon. Are these guys bad actors? No.
Nope.
But what was the other movie that came out in 1998 that Ben Affleck was featured in?
Shakespeare in Love.
Okay. Have you seen Shakespeare in Love?
I probably saw it in 99, but I've seen it.
Okay. Now, I knew Ben Affleck at that time, and I knew Armageddon, and I knew him, and I'm just like, Ben Affleck is in this movie? Okay. And you know what? He was phenomenal. He was phenomenal in the film, I thought. He was a perfect diva actor. And then he has this one moment with Joseph Fiennes where he comes in and he goes, you know, Romeo and Juliet, it's a better title. And you know the moment I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just this beautifully sincere film. And I think it's a beautifully sincere moment for Ben Affleck. And that's the thing about Ben Affleck as an actor. Everybody wants to talk about his failures, you know, or the chintzy stuff he did, like, you know, Forces of Nature, Reindeer Games, and, you know, and of course the aforementioned Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't hear anybody talking about Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. You don't hear anybody talking about talking about the other films that you mentioned, you know, like mm-hmm. Chasing Amy and things like that. And then you got Daredevil, and that's another one that people go to. That's another one people go to.
And at the time, so in 2003, let's just talk about 2003 in general.
In
2003, he had three movies come out. There's a little more to the story if you know kind of the backstory. So he had Daredevil, Zhili, and Paycheck come out.
And Paycheck, yeah.
Jersey Girl was actually shot, if I'm not mistaken, it was shot before Zhili and done. It was ready to be released before Zhili.
It was in the box. Yeah, I remember this. Yeah.
Contractual obligations required that Zhili come out first. And that happening murdered Jersey Girl.
Yeah.
Because Zhili was terrible.
Yeah.
I am not going to defend that movie. I have watched it. It is bad.
It's an awkward film. I couldn't make it through it. And the thing is, I feel that way about every J-Lo film. I can barely get through her music. Watching her on in a movie, I just find it painful. And what really broke my heart about 2003 is I saw, out of those three films, I saw in their entirety two films.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Daredevil and I saw Paycheck. Okay. Before we go to Daredevil, before we open that Pandora's box, I want to talk about Paycheck. I want to talk about what I consider the last good John Woo film that I've seen, Paycheck.
It's a good movie.
I loved it. I loved the movie. I loved the premise. I loved the feel of the film. Terrific cast. I mean, you had Uma Thurman, you had Ben Affleck, and you had Aaron Eckhart. And you had Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
You had Paul Giamatti. When you put in Paul Giamatti, to me, slam dunk. But you know, but that's just it. Again, he's really good. When he's got great people around him. And Paycheck, I thought, was a really, really good film.
Yes,
I genuinely enjoyed it. And as far as time travel movies go, or time wibbly wobbly kind of movies go, I felt it worked. I really found it ingenious. And so I really enjoyed Paycheck. So now let's get to Daredevil. Okay. Again, this is another big, big sticking point with a lot of people. Daredevil.
Yep.
I am one of the few people in my circles that talk about the theatrical release and go, I enjoyed it. I remember walking out of that movie thinking that was cool.
I enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the theatrical release, and then I had the pleasure of seeing the director's cut. I thought that was a superior film. But it doesn't take away the fact that I really enjoyed the theatrical release.
And the thing that I remember about, there are a lot of things I remember about about Daredevil, both good and bad. I thought the scene in the playground was pretty ridiculous. That I will give the critics of Daredevil.
Sure.
That was a ridiculous scene. It wasn't as bad as the back and forth between Michael Keaton and Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns, but it was on that ridiculous level. It's
sure.
I thought that was weak. Some of the things that I really enjoyed, I loved the moment where Daredevil stops himself from just tearing into this guy because his kid, the bad guy's kid was present,
mm-hmm.
and he's standing there in the rain. He's saying, "I'm not the bad guy. I'm not the bad guy." And there was that little bit of conflict that you see more of that in Marvel characters than you do in DC characters.
Yes.
So I really enjoyed. I loved Michael Clark Duncan's Kingpin.
He was fantastic.
He was Kingpin.
Yes.
Every time I see someone cosplaying as Kingpin, I go, he's not black.
Yeah.
Because my Kingpin will always be Michael Clark Duncan.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you. He was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will use this as my defense for Daredevil. It wasn't Elektra.
Oh, you are right about that.
And yet people give Garner a pass. Why? Because she had killer abs and she looked good in the outfit. But Daredevil, a lot of people had issues with Daredevil. And I think what people are, that was a bad year for Affleck. He was overexposed because of J-Lo. Three films. that two of them should have done. One of them should have done much better than it did at the box office, mm-hmm. which was Paycheck. But two films. But here's the other thing: it has been 10 years since Daredevil.
Yes.
And people are still bringing it up.
It's been 10 years since Daredevil, and Ben Affleck is now an Oscar award-winning director.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I mean, let's look at some of these movies that he's done in between that.
I was going to say, he also kind of won an Oscar before that also.
With Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
But again, people are like, oh, Daredevil, a 10-year-old movie. Okay, who else was in Daredevil? All right, we got Ben Affleck. We got Jennifer Garner. Oh, we all give Jennifer Garner a pass because she was Elektra. And she did really well in the role. Yep. But nobody mentions Elektra, the film.
No.
Because it shouldn't be mentioned. It should never be spoken of ever again.
No.
But people have given her a pass. Michael Clark Duncan, God rest his soul. Michael Clark Duncan, he's mm-hmm. done some stinkers in his career.
Yes, he has.
Oh, and then there was that terrible television show that he did called The Finder?
I don't know. I did not watch that.
It was one of those things. I tuned in. I'm like, I want to like this because of Michael Clark Duncan, but this just hurts. A part of me is dying inside. There are people in this. All right, so let me go on ahead.
Joey Pants. Joe Pantoliano is in this.
Yes. Yes. Is he a bad actor?
No.
No, he's not. Colin Farrell is in this movie. Yes, he was way over the top as Bullseye.
Bullseye is kind of supposed to be way over the top, though.
And it's Colin freaking Farrell.
Yeah.
Come on. But Ben Affleck is Batman. Ooh, Daredevil, a 10-year-old film. So let's talk about some of the movies he has done in between 2003 and now. 2006, Smoke and Aces. There is nothing to hate about Smoke and Aces.
Nope.
And I'm
2006. 2006 was a good year for him.
Yeah.
Because there was also. So people keep mentioning and bringing up that he played Daredevil, but people tend to push out of their head that he's also already played Superman.
Yeah. Okay. So you want to go there. I wasn't ready to go there just yet because I wanted to talk about some of the other stuff.
We can hold off, though, because I'm fine with holding off.
There's Argo, of course. I mean, everyone's talking about Argo.
Sure.
But in the same year, I didn't realize that also. In the same year that he did Smoke and Aces, he did this little film called Hollywoodland. Okay. Now, this is fresh in my mind on a number of points. One, right now, Pip is on this weird kick. My better half, Pip Ballantyne, mm-hmm. she is on this weird kick. She is watching on YouTube all of these scandals and mystery shows. And it's called Scandals and Mysteries.
Sure.
And they did the very tragic, tragic story behind George Reeves. And this is why, so let's go ahead and let's harp on Hollywoodland. This was the movie I think Ben Affleck should have been nominated and should have won an Oscar for.
I completely agree.
Because Hollywoodland, I'm sitting there in the theater watching it going, sweet crap. This is not the same Ben Affleck that people have been hating on. And I was thinking that in 2006.
Yeah. So the Ben Affleck that people hate on is the Ben Affleck that was playing George Reeve playing Superman.
Yeah.
He was very hammy, very over the top, sticking his chest out and sticking his chin out even farther.
A little cocky.
But that's the way George Reeve played Superman.
Yeah.
And if they were casting, if they were stunt casting just based on that, just based on if all we ever see was George Reeve as Superman, what most people think of as Ben Affleck seems like brilliant casting because he's very cocky, mm-hmm. very hammy. But then you see the rest of George Reeve's life.
Exactly. That was my next thing. The second thing that Ben Affleck nails, and it's at the very end. And I was talking about this last night with Pip when they were playing up the whole, ooh, the thing about Hollywoodland. Ooh, you know, George had these weird bruises and ooh, you know, and honestly, I think Hollywoodland was probably what really happened. Mm-hmm. George Reeves at the end of Hollywoodland, the agent says, yeah, George was auditioning to be a professional wrestler. Now, this is a guy who once upon a time, he was, you know, he was Superman. He was the biggest icon in Hollywood. And then he shows up and he does Superman. And I think they even did a quote that I think they did in Hollywoodland, where he basically got together with one of the cast members and they did a little toast in his dressing room. And he said, here's to being at the bottom of the barrel. And that was right before they started shooting Superman.
Yes.
But in Hollywoodland, the detective playing by Adrian Brody, he was watching the audition reels. And there's a scene where he's doing the Akita rolls and doing the Akita rolls, and he screws up his shoulder. He hits something wrong, and he gets up, and George Reeves looks at the camera, and he tells it to cut. And there's that moment where you don't see the cockiness. You see this dark, brooding, bitter individual, and it's just enough.
Yep.
And it was more than just enough with the audition. He's like, I'm done. I'm done with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that darkness, as you said, Tony, the rest of George Reeves, if he brings that to Bruce Wayne, if he brings that darkness to the character, which being Zack Snyder and considering the tone of Man of Steel, that is going to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
I have a feeling this is going to be the Batman that's going to blow everyone's mind in the same way that Frank Miller blew everybody's mind with The Dark Knight Returns. I'm putting it out there, but I really believe that. I believe that deep in my core, because there were moments of Hollywoodland, particularly when he was playing Superman, and particularly when he was there was one particular clip where they're filming Superman, and Ben Affleck puts his hands in his pockets and he leans forward and he goes, "Well, it's all thanks to Superman," and he winks. I remember that as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that vividly as a kid. Every time I watched the Superman reruns.
Oh yeah.
And when Affleck did it, I forgot for a second that that was Affleck, because
yeah.
He not only sold it, he looked frighteningly like George Reeves.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it was chilling. It was freaking chilling. And I just feel like that this casting. Yeah, I would have never seen it coming, but at the same time. There are all these people that are, oh, Daredevil. First thing that popped in my mind was Hollywoodland. And I said,
absolutely.
This is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome.
And I'm not sure, and I'm going to quiz you here a little bit.
All right.
How familiar are you with Affleck and his directing?
I haven't seen it all the way through. Pip has and raved about The Town.
Okay.
The problem was I came in during the heist.
Oh.
I came in right at the heist. And I was like, oh, crap. I want to see. And just when I saw the heist from The Town, I was like, wow. I mean, there was just some, and this was with no buildup, and I immediately left the room because it was so intense. I missed Argo, and I'm ticked that I missed Argo because it was on my to watch list. I really wanted to see Argo, and I know that Pip and I are going to have a grown up movie night and watch Argo.
Have you seen Gone Baby Gone?
No, I have not.
Okay, that's his first major directorial offering.
Okay.
And we did an episode of it on the podcast, and holy shit. That movie is intense. And for a first-time director, it's a damn good movie too. If I'm not mistaken, he also wrote that one.
Yeah, he did. I'm looking at the cast right now. Well, first off, he's got two pluses right already with me. He's got Morgan Freeman in there. He's also got Ed Harris. And I'm a raging Ed Harris fan. I love his work.
And
I love his
buddy. And he's directing his little brother in it, too.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. Casey Affleck. Yeah.
This movie it's super intense. The thing about it, what was great about it for the podcast is there are some really strong moral questions that the movie asks you halfway through the movie. And then just keeps going. At one point, one of the main what seems like the climax of the movie happens, and then there's a resolution, and you think, man, that movie just flew right by. And then you realize you're only about an hour and 20 minutes in, and it's like a 2+ hour movie. And it's like, I thought this movie just ended, and then there's a whole nother movie on after it, and it's fantastic. It thematically, and not thematically is not even the right word, stylistically, it very much had that feel of the first time you watch Psycho. And you're like,
oh, in other words, you're watching this one film, then suddenly it takes an entirely different spin, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm on this ride now.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And you're completely fine because both movies are great. And that was really the feel I got from Gone Baby Gone. And it's just a damn good movie. And he's not afraid to get dark as a director.
No, I mean, there was some stuff that just in the little bit that I saw of the town, there was some stuff that was pretty gritty.
Oh yeah.
And very hardcore. And I do like a film. I mean, I like my popcorn films, but I also like films that will do that, that will go deep or that will go a little dark or make the characters less than perfect. I mean, you and I talked about this on Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. Cause I do want to bring it back to how Snyder is going to approach this. One of my favorite moments in Man of Steel was when, was the fact, and I think it was one of the reasons why a lot of geeks reacted so strongly to Man of Steel, is that it was kind of psychological. We see Clark Kent getting bullied. We see him getting bullied, and we see him, you know, also hearing, not necessarily hearing thoughts, but hearing the whispers of the kids when they're talking behind his back.
Yep.
And as a kid, that's a lot to shoulder. But there's that great moment where the kids are bullying Clark and pushing him, and then they, you know, grown-ups appear and they all scatter. But then his dad comes up. And here comes Jonathan Kent. Here comes Kevin Costner.
Yep.
And he says, "I really wanted to hit them, Dad." And he nods, looks at where the kids went. He said, "I kind of wanted you to hit them too."
Yep.
And it was such a, and you know, and I'm sure there were Superman purists going, "Pa, Kent would have never said something like that." Screw it. He's a dad.
And everybody likes to point at that and point at a few other things that Costner said and did as Jonathan Kent. And the thing that I point out is they completely reversed the roles of Jor-El and Jonathan Kent for this iteration of Superman. In other iterations of Superman, Jor-El is the one holding him back, trying right. not to let him interact with humanity to keep him pure and safe and precious
right.
as a Kryptonian. And in this movie, Jor-El's the one telling him, you got to get out there and help these people and show them how much better they can be by your example. And it's exactly reversed, because normally Jonathan Kent's the one that's showing him
the moral compass.
He's the moral compass. And I thought that was brilliant. It's like, this character is so ingrained in our society that to make it new and fresh, you have to do things like that. And I thought it was brilliantly played because.
And I also think it worked too, because we're a different country now. We're a different culture now.
Yes.
And you know, a culture alien to us would say, yeah, be that shining symbol. People today are going to be like, no. You gotta hold that back, because people are gonna try to, they're gonna do something to you. You know, they're gonna take you away. They're gonna isolate you. You know, you gotta be more careful. And yep. And I did. I really enjoyed that little human moment. Even for Costner to say, because you could tell there was a lot of struggle there. He wanted to say to Clark, you did the right thing by saving those kids. But there was another part of Jonathan Kent that was going, you screwed up. You screwed up because now people are going to talk about you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not ready to deal with that. You're sent here for a reason, but not this reason for publicity or this or this. And it was a wonderful, wonderful character study. And I totally got behind that. Snyder did make, Superman dark. He made him very dark. He made him edgy. Another big problem people had was, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Man of Steel, and if you haven't, shame on you.
If you've listened to this podcast at all, we talk about Man of Steel about every 4 or 5 okay. episodes, so it's all right.
The one of the big hoopla's was, ooh, Superman killed Zod. Superman's not supposed to kill. All right, you know, this is where it doesn't become your daddy's Superman anymore, because when Zod says the line, "You've taken my purpose from me," my thought in the theater was, holy shit, it is now all on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's going to die. Because if he doesn't die, Superman dies. And I don't think this is that film. And I did. I mean, I was like, if you didn't see it coming, you weren't paying attention.
Another thing, because I am a ridiculous Superman fan. I'm sitting here in a Superman t-shirt.
Tony's reaction to this is going to be.
So I'm sitting here in a Superman t-shirt. And we weren't even, I thought we were filming this tomorrow night talking about Superman. So this wasn't even, I didn't even prep by wearing this. I've got two little Superman figures sitting right here next to me. People that say Superman doesn't kill, and they point to that as a, excuse me, as a flaw in Man of Steel, don't understand the character, because in almost every iteration of Superman, Superman has killed. And Superman has killed Zod. And the death of Zod and the murder of Zod by Superman, in some cases it is murder, is the reason that Superman has the I will never kill again rule. It's because he was forced to kill Zod.
Right.
By one reason or another. People who say that Superman should never kill obviously weren't really paying attention in Superman 2.
Yeah, well, no. Because I remember hearing somebody say, well, that really wasn't, he really didn't kill him. It happened off screen. I'm like, did he throw Zod? Did Zod slide into an abyss? I got news for you. Superman killed Zod.
And let's talk just a second about how Superman reacts in Superman 2 versus Man of Steel.
Oh, yeah.
In Man of Steel, he is crushed.
He is crushed.
By that. In Superman 2, kind of smirks.
He smirks and nods and he does the little, hey, you see? I'm thinking. See what I did there? I'm like, wow.
Yeah. It's pretty sociopathic in Superman 2 versus Man of Steel.
Killing your own countrymen. Killing your own your own species. Dick move. Yeah. Wow. But there's one other thing I wanted to make sure we covered in this one, too, is I know that, you know, you and I may, you know, there are going to be people that will listen to your show, and they're going to be like, oh, Tony, you know, T, you guys don't know what you're talking about. But there was a fan, God bless him, but there's a fan that went out there, combed movies that featured Henry Cavill, featured Amy Adams, featured Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm blanking on the gentleman that they're talking about who's going to be
Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston. And they put together a fan trailer for Man of Steel 2.
That is a sexy trailer.
That is a balls sexy trailer. I really believe Zack Snyder should seek this guy out and say, give me your resume. I want to offer you a job. Because that was the trailer that made me go, oh, yeah, Affleck could pull this off. But I will argue, it will always come down to, and because you and I are writers, mm-hmm. Maybe we're biased, but I really believe at the core of every good film, there's got to be a solid script.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree.
I mean, and I feel very lucky. I've seen the films that I've seen that are standouts for me at the theaters. Pip and I got out to see Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. We loved it. We got out to see Pacific Rim. We had a blast.
Yep.
And then we just saw a couple weeks ago, we saw Elysium.
I have yet to see that one.
And we loved Elysium. We loved Elysium. There were some just truly gut-wrenching, truly heartbreaking moments in Elysium. Some wonderful performances. But at one of these things that all three of these scripts, what all three of these movies have in common, even a popcorn fun flick like Pacific Rim, they all had solid scripts. They all had really, really solid scripts. And, you know, if you have a weak script, then you're just going to run into issues. And, you know, I think Zack Snyder, if he's got the same people who worked on Man of Steel, I think they're going to have a great time. And I think also when Zack Snyder came out, to do the promo, you know, with the Batman Superman imposed logo,
mm-hmm.
They read from The Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
And he said, this is not where the script's from, but this is the tone we're going for. I'm like, yeah, it's going to be. And then I saw that sexy fan trailer, and I thought, this is gonna be something great.
So we talked about on Backseat Producers when Man of Steel came out, because we did think that there are some reasoned arguments made against Man of Steel that people really have problems with, and if a second movie is done the right way, the problems that people have with the first Man of Steel seem like they are intentional. And what I'm specifically talking about is the mass destruction of Metropolis. There were a lot of people that had real problems with the fact that Superman did almost nothing, arguably nothing, to save anyone because he was in a fight. He was in a fight for his life. Now, our arguments, thinking about it, Zod is a seasoned soldier, and Clark is a pacifist who has avoided fighting his entire life.
Right.
Arguably, he's never trained to fight. Whereas Zod, that's all he did. That's what he was bred for.
He was bred and programmed for it. Yeah.
So
and additionally, one of the things that you don't see, Clark uses his powers when he does his super stuff. You know, when he saves people in the oil rig, saves the kids in the bus, and saves Amy Adams' life and all this different stuff. When he does that as Clark.
Yes.
And he's still trying to figure out his powers. He doesn't have that montage evening like Christopher Reeve did as Superman, which is a classic Superman thing. But I think I see where you're going with this. What you're saying is that with the mass destruction of Metropolis and the rebuilding of Metropolis and everything, this is going to be Lex Luthor's platform.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a pretty damn strong platform.
It's a great platform. I mean, the simple argument is aliens have destroyed Metropolis. It took a human to rebuild it.
Yeah.
And that, with that one line, if that's the way they go with it, and if that's the take they have on it, then this all just works.
Yeah.
It's all for a reason. It's all part of the plan.
It's all part of the plan. Yeah. And you know, and again, going back to Snyder, I remember when Snyder was handed the keys to Man of Steel and everybody flipped out. Now, I was nervous, but I was nervous because of Snyder, but because of what we got with Superman Returns. I mean, Bryan Singer, he respected the material, but I think he respected the material almost too much.
And I'm still one of the few people that really does enjoy and defend Superman Returns.
And you see, I really wanted to like it. I really, really, really wanted to like it. I thought Brandon Routh was decent. He was a decent Superman. I thought there was so much that I wanted to like about this film, but there was so much that I didn't. Lex, when you've got somebody like Kevin Spacey and he turns in a C performance as Lex Luthor, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I'm kind of sick of Lex Luthor, the giggling mustache twirling villain.
Right.
Because
Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor in the first two films, I thought was wonderful because he didn't play him that way. The rubbing his hands together and twirling the mustache or whatever. He was playing him as a shyster, as a con man, as a charlatan who happened to be wildly sociopathic. And, yes. and it worked.
I think my biggest problem with Hackman as Lex Luthor, and it's not Hackman as Lex Luthor that I have a problem with, it's the fact that the character that he was playing wasn't really Lex Luthor.
No. But it was a spin on Lex Luthor.
Yeah, it was. And it was a good character. It was a good foil for the version of Superman that was in the first two movies.
Yes. Yes. But Lex Luthor, you know, I mean, Kevin Spacey, you know, giving an average performance, and then the stuff like turning Superman into this like pseudo jilted boyfriend stalker thing, and you know, having him using his X-ray vision to spy on his kid, and that was the other thing too, the whole super baby. I was like, okay, and then
I still have questions about that because. And my take on it, when I saw the film the first time, my take on the super stalker thing, my first thought wasn't that. It was, this is the way, the only way that as this child's father and not being in that house, this is dad standing outside the door looking at his kids sleep.
Yeah.
And that's that was the take I had on it as a father. And so I didn't think of it anything untoward about that. Because it's also Superman.
Right. But there were some other things too that made me kind of roll my eyes a little bit. Like for example, the homage to Action Comics cover, that was a long way to go for that one single moment.
Yeah, especially when they had already done it.
Yeah. You know, Perry White saying Great Caesar's Ghost. And it just came out completely. It just felt very flat. And again, that was my biggest problem with Superman. Superman Returns was the script just felt like it was all over the ballpark, and I didn't think that was a strong enough script to be a Superman film. On the other hand, Sucker Punch. Now, ooh. I know I've caught a lot of flack on this, but this is why I think I thought Zack Snyder being put in charge of Man of Steel was going to be great, because I loved Sucker Punch.
That movie had a terribly weak script.
And you see, I thought it had a terribly strong script.
That movie was not good. I'm sorry, T. That movie was not good.
No, I will defend Sucker Punch, because to me, it is so nice to be sitting in a movie theater and suddenly at the very end go, wow. Because I saw none of that coming. I saw none of it coming. And I loved it. I loved the multi-layered aspect of the film that she escaped into this fantasy land. And in the fantasy land, she escaped into an even deeper fantasy land. So you had a lot of different layers going on here. And then at the very end, to see it all unravel the way it did, I was like, oh, that's just phenomenal. And I did. I absolutely adore Sucker Punch. From a visual standpoint, from a writing standpoint, and from a directing standpoint. And when
now I will agree, from a visual and a directing standpoint, it's a fantastic movie in both of those respects.
You just don't like the film.
I can't say that for
then
the
let's
script,
step back even but. Further, because a lot of people had some issues with Watchmen. Again, I remember growing up with that comic,
mm-hmm.
and that graphic novel, and I loved Watchmen. I loved Watchmen. Well, not take that back. I liked Watchmen. I loved V for Vendetta, but I liked Watchmen. My biggest problem with Watchmen.
I loved Watchmen. I couldn't stand V for Vendetta.
No, I'm talking about the graphic novel. I'm not talking about the film.
Yes.
Okay.
So am I.
Okay. Now, but here was my problem with Watchmen. I've actually had this debate with Jack Mangan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The shot of the alien, sprawled across Manhattan is very iconic.
The alien vagina monster.
Yeah, the alien one-eyed monster thing. You know? But to me, that was Alan Moore saying, I'm tripping balls today, so here's what I'm going to throw at you. Now, and my problem with that plot device that was supposedly supposed to unify the world, I never quite bought it, because it was a plot line that was so buried under all the other plot lines. I just felt like it was a weird, out of left field thing. Whereas in the film, where they had to take liberties and it pissed off Alan Moore, instead of making this alien the massive threat, they make it Dr. Manhattan, right. Which we have been watching. And when you think about it, it's a logical step. Because even in the graphic novel, they're talking about how powerful Dr. Manhattan is, how powerful Dr. Manhattan is, how powerful Dr. Manhattan is. What if Dr. Manhattan one day just said, you know what? I am that powerful. And I'm just realizing you all are idiots. So making Dr. Manhattan, making that quote unquote controversial change, to me, actually made Watchmen a better film than a graphic novel. And visually, and again, as a director, Zack Snyder visually nails it.
Oh, and the visuals in that movie are amazing.
And even to a point of where he went shot for shot, panel for panel, what was in the graphic novel, you see it in the film. That's a beautiful homage. And then you've got the cast, and the cast was rock solid, in my opinion.
I'll tell you, one of the things that movie can't be praised for enough is its opening credits.
Yes, the opening credits were stunning. They were stunning and did a lot that they went there. They went where the graphic novel went. But,
yes.
You know, for anybody to say, well, he couldn't, you know, you couldn't have done the graphic novel in one film. But at the same time, he cleaned up, in my opinion, because that's my biggest problem with Alan Moore. With V for Vendetta, it was pretty straightforward for me, but it had its splinter plots, but it all tied back. With and I've watched the director's cut of Watchmen, and it's just as solid. Mm-hmm. But the thing I felt, the thing that bothered me about Watchmen, the same thing that bothered me in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the graphic novel, and the other stuff that I've attempted to read from Alan, I'm a genius, and if you don't get my work, it's because you're a moron more, is that he goes off on these weird tangents, and then some of them just never get resolved. And he just doesn't care, because I'm Alan Moore. And I'm probably pissing off a lot of your listeners right now. And I hate that, because my thing as a writer is, if you're going to go there, bring it back. It's got to make sense. It's got to make sense for me. And for me, Zack Snyder made Watchmen, to me, something I could digest, something palatable, but it wasn't talking down to me. And I loved Watchmen. So with those two films, when he got handed the keys to Man of Steel, I thought, you know, this is going to be a great ride. This is going to be a great ride. But I was still nervous because of Superman Returns. And I said, we just got to hope it's a good script.
I think the thing that, that made me the most comfortable and that I felt the most comfortable about was, one, knowing that Christopher Nolan was producing.
Yeah.
because he's built up a lot of credit with me. He can walk up and punch me in the face a few times before I'm going to start having a problem with him. He's not a perfect director. There are flaws in his movies, but by and large, I enjoy Christopher Nolan films.
Yes.
And as a producer, I wanted to see what he could do as a producer to take whatever skills he has as a director and put people together in such a way that, all right, these are the people that are going to play these parts, and these are the people that are going to do these jobs to make this film, and I'm going to support them in any way I can. And I think having David Goyer as a writer was excellent. Zack Snyder doing the visuals and the directing, it was a great move. The cast that they put together was fantastic.
Really?
Just
really.
Top down. It was just fantastic all the way across the board. We've talked about everybody but Michael Shannon, who was just freaking amazing as Zod.
It's Michael Shannon. Come on, man. It's Michael Shannon.
Yeah. Not to take away from...
I still argue, and I mean, I've said this before. I really believe, though, Diane Lane and Kevin Costner stole the film. They were Jonathan and Martha Kent that I believed, that I bought, that I felt for, and I just could not get it. I love that moment when she's sitting there and she goes, "So what are you going to do when you're not out saving the world?" that's a question your mom would ask you if you were Superman. You know
exactly.
What I'm saying?
Exactly.
So
I loved Jor-El.
Russell Crowe
was fantastic.
You're going to want to lean to your left. You know, I mean, he was really fun.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I mean, I thought he was wonderful. I tell you, that's another thing too. Every time, I mean, I've seen many different, you know, many different iterations of you know, launching, you know, Superman to you know, launching the baby in the rocket.
Yes.
You know, I've seen the television show. I've seen the one that I did. It was very heartfelt in Superman the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were saying when Lara was saying goodbye, or Kara, is it Kara?
It's
Kara
Lara. Or Lara? Kara is Supergirl. Laura is his mom.
Yeah, when Laura is saying no, I just want to say goodbye to him one more time, I nearly lost my shit.
Oh yeah,
I was like, whoa. I mean, I could tell it was hard for Jor-El, but for Laura, it was unbearable. And then you think, and then to add on to that, I mean, there were a lot of liberties they took with Kryptonian canon. But to make that idea, to take that idea of, like, you know, this is the first organic birth we have had in a millennia.
Yeah.
And then they've got to take this miracle, this true miracle baby, put it in a rocket and send it off to Earth. I was like, and to watch Lara give that up, that was heart-wrenching.
And another thing I loved, and it was right around that scene, they had almost absolutely zero ties to any other Superman movie. The music, none of it. Nothing was the same. Except the visual, the graphic of the rocket going off was that crystal starship.
Yeah.
And I thought, it was like, that is perfect.
Yeah.
Because that tie is so obtuse.
It's subtle.
And it's
subtle.
It really doesn't tie the two together, but it kind of does.
it gives it a nod. Yeah. It gives it a nod.
And that was enough. I didn't need any of it. I as much as I absolutely love John Williams' score from the first one.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I am very happy that they didn't use it.
I mean, and that was one of my other issues with Superman Returns. They were spending so much time paying homage to Superman 1 and 2
mm-hmm.
that I was like, okay, I get it. You love the film, Brian. Let's move on.
Yeah.
And I just felt like they were stuck in the past.
They were trying hard to avoid, to get people to disremember 3 and 4 that they forgot they were making something new.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that was a real blunder on Bryan Singer's part. But again with this particular Superman, you're right. They didn't go out of their way that I was like, they're trying too hard to be different. And I think that with this Batman, with the Ben Affleck Batman, I really do believe it's going to be very much like the Batman that we see with the Dark Knight, which we see with Batman Begins. We're not going to get the origin story, which I'm going to be very thankful for,
because
it's like, okay, we've already got that. But I also believe that this Batman is going to be, I'm going to trust Ben Affleck that he is not going to be sounding like he's been smoking a pack of cigarettes, since childhood. It was the one thing that kind of got old, in the Bale Batmans. But I really believe that this Ben, I see Ben Affleck, particularly, someone did a Photoshop of Ben Affleck wearing the Batman armor.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice that I heard in my head was Kevin Conroy.
Mm, yeah.
And I could see, the Bruce Wayne being a bit like his George Reeves character.
Right.
But I could also see Affleck channeling that darker, personal, inner demon George Reeves for the Bat. And I'm just crossing my fingers that they don't suffer, that the film doesn't suffer, that Man of Steel 2 doesn't suffer what The Dark Knight Rises, for me, suffered, which was it tried to do so much that I was starting to get a little lost.
Mm.
I felt that this is a trap of any sequel. Okay, we did this, so let's do this, but let's make it bigger. Let's make it wilder. Let's throw in more villains. Let's throw in more twists and turns. It's like, well, can we just stick with what we got? To me, if I were to look at the trilogy on a whole, the Bale Nolan trilogy, to me, the strongest one was The Dark Knight.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It was the strongest of them all. And again, going back to, since we were here to talk about mainly Affleck, that was the other thing that I had forgotten about that I posted on my Facebook page. When Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker, people flipped out.
Yes.
People flipped out. They were like, the guy from 10 Things I Hate About You and A Knight's Tale, he's going to be the Joker. And let's face it, that was a phenomenal Joker. That was an Oscar nominated Joker.
It was an Oscar winning Joker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
now
a comic book movie wins an Oscar. Think about that for a second. And it was the guy that everybody thought was going to flop.
And well, I'm going to argue that The Dark Knight Rises, I'm sorry, The Dark Knight is not a comic book movie.
I've heard this argument before.
It's a psychodrama.
Yeah.
It's a thriller. It is closer to a gadget based thriller than anything. Because there is very little superheroic about it in any respect. If you could make this exact same movie, and take away all the trappings of it, of men in suits or the Joker wearing makeup. And the film is still amazing. It still tells a fantastic story.
Right.
And we've seen movies that have done this without having people in costumes. There was somewhere I was going to go.
I was going to say, if you took away the bat suit, took away the makeup, you're dangerously close to Skyfall.
Yes.
And, you know, and I'm not, I don't have an issue with that, cause I enjoyed the hell out of Skyfall.
Skyfall was a good flick.
It was a great flick. But you know, again, the thing is, Heath Ledger proved the naysayers wrong. And for people to flip out like this over Ben Affleck, you know, there was also a lot of pushback from people that were saying, you know, we have no idea what the script is like. We have no idea until the movie comes out. Why are we condemning this movie? And again, let's keep in mind when people say, well, I just got one thing to say, it's Daredevil. That was a movie that was 10 years ago.
Right.
If you are still carrying a torch over Daredevil from 10 years ago, you need to get over it.
Yeah.
Because even the comic book movies back then, back back in 2003, I don't see anybody carrying a torch over Elektra. No. I don't see anybody carrying a torch over that piece of steaming poo called Hulk.
Fantastic Four.
The what?
The Fantastic Four movies.
Yeah, yeah, man. You talk about a movie that tried really hard. And, you know, yeah, and I remember, too, when Chris Evans got cast as Captain America, nobody even blinked an eye. And I'm like, hey, don't you guys remember? This was the guy who was, he was fun in the Fantastic Four, but I don't see him playing Captain America.
No, I didn't either.
And, I mean, but, you know, but hey, he sold it.
Yes, he did.
He freaking sold it. And you know, people were talking about Joe Johnston. And nobody mentioned Joe Johnston. I didn't even find out that Joe Johnston was the director until I saw the film, and at the end his name came up, and I said, yeah. Oh, now I see why I like this movie so much, because I'm a raging fan of The Rocketeer.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, nobody, but yet with Daredevil, and I really don't think it's because it's Daredevil. I think it's because it's Ben Affleck. People are saying, well, he's too Ben Affleck. He's too, well, what? He's too pretty?
He's a good looking guy who doesn't take himself very seriously.
He's tapping Jennifer Garner. I'm sure that has a lot to do with it.
Hey, I've won two Oscars. I've got a beautiful wife. The genetic stock of those two produce some beautiful children.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he's had Oscars for writing and directing. His Oscars aren't for his acting.
No. And the other thing too that I think is really cool, there was a great spread. They were talking about the comeback of Ben Affleck with Argo.
Mm-hmm.
And Entertainment Weekly. And they did this terrific 2-page spread of who Ben Affleck was. And it was this 2-page spread of Ben Affleck. He was wearing like hipster glasses, and he had the script in his hand. It was like Ben Affleck, the writer. And then it was Ben Affleck, you know, with his head in his hand, going, oh, fuck, another one of these days. And it was Ben Affleck, the director. And then standing next to Ben Affleck, the director, sandwiched between the writer, was Ben Affleck, the actor. And you see him in the tight white shirt, the tight jeans, and he's got the same look that he had in Shakespeare in Love, where he's, you know, his chin is out and he's going, this is what I think the character should be. So, and it was just, you could just tell that Ben Affleck was just giving a wink and a nod to himself.
Yeah.
And that must drive people. It's the same thing that drives people bananas about Vin Diesel.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I don't know if you saw it. I respect Vin Diesel more and more because you've got these Hollywood players who are going to Kickstarter to fund their works, their quote unquote passions.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel said, "Screw that. This is my passion. I'm going to pay for it." He put his house up mm-hmm. as collateral for Riddick.
Yep. Yep.
And no one is more. When I take that back, Pip, the bigger Vin Diesel fan. I should rephrase that. The bigger Riddick fan in this household is Pip, and she is like, this movie had better not suck, and because she was not happy with Chronicles of Riddick, and that starred Carl Urban, who's one of her countrymen, who's a
fantastic actor in his own right too.
Yeah. I mean, as I said tonight, I saw just a quick tangent. I saw on Facebook Hutch. J.C. Hutchins
mm-hmm.
saw Dread for the first time tonight, and he described it as ultra violent. And I went, yeah, that was Dread. That was Judge Dread.
Sure.
And quite honestly, Carl Urban had more emotion and versatility wearing a mask than Stallone did without it.
Yeah.
And Urban, Urban couldn't save the Chronicles of Riddick. But here we go. We got Riddick. We got Riddick. And damn it, I want that movie to see just because Vin Diesel's one of ours. He's a geek. He's a gamer. Yep. I'm all for that.
Yep. So I have 2 points that I still want to make before we end up wrapping up. One, I think part of the problem, and I think what people need to remove themselves from is the fact that the Nolan trilogy of Batman movies, that Batman, that universe's Batman, I don't think can exist and absolutely would not work in a world where there is a Superman, where there are other superheroes. I think that that presentation of Batman couldn't work. I don't think it could work with a superhero in the world. So I think they need to go with a presentation of Batman that is different, that is not the same as what we saw under Nolan's films. And I think somebody like Affleck, if you just look at the physical presence and what the actors bring to the character, Bale versus Affleck, Bale worked in that world. I don't think Affleck would have worked as that Batman, but I think the Batman that they need to stand toe-to-toe to Superman is somebody like Affleck. And that's my biggest defense of Affleck as Batman, because he needs to have a little more swagger. He needs to have a little more confidence and self-assurity, because he is now going against a being that can do damn near anything, including see right through that mask.
Yeah.
And part of what made Christian Bale compelling is that he was flawed. He made mistakes. He wasn't perfect. He had to fight his injuries. He had to rise above that. And when you're standing toe to toe with Superman, I don't think that same character works. Because one of the brilliant things that I loved about Man of Steel also was there were some incredibly just brutal fights.
Oh yeah.
And anytime they showed Henry Cavill immediately after getting punched right in the face with a bulldozer, he looked exactly the same, like just splashed water on his face. And I loved that. I loved how they showed that about Superman, that these terrible things that would just pulverize mountains, it doesn't affect him. It doesn't physically affect him. And I thought that was a really nice, subtle way of showing that. Because if you're going to have Superman and Batman be, live in that same world, you can't have a guy who's hobbling around with a cane and be that hero that stands up to Superman. It just doesn't work.
I mean, you need that, to me, Bale was the Batman from Batman Year One.
Mm-hmm.
What Affleck is going to be, he is going to be the Batman from The Dark Knight Returns. He is going to be the Frank Miller's Batman, because he's going to be that veteran. He's going to be that hardened, maybe even a slightly bitter Batman, where he's like, I've done everything I can for this city, and I will continue to do everything for this city, but fuck all. And I think Affleck can do this. I really think Affleck can do that. And you see glimmers of that darkness in the films we've mentioned, Hollywood Land, The Town. I mean, I think you're going to get that. And I think this is going to be a Batman that people are going to go, wow, he was awesome.
Yeah.
And if he's not, then we will come back on this podcast and we will go, okay, let's talk about what went wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My biggest point is, I think we're condemning it early.
Yeah.
I think too many people are condemning it early. I love how people are showing how ridiculous that is. I saw an article a few days after, and it was, I think it was on BuzzFeed, and it was 21 reasons why we need to shut the fuck up and give Ben Affleck a chance. And it was 21 Twitter posts from people who were complaining about Heath Ledger being cast as Joker.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Exactly.
So there's that. And the fact is, we don't know what the script is. We don't know what the story is. We don't even know at this point if Christopher Nolan's involved. People have pointed out that The press releases, if you read the press releases carefully, Christopher Nolan's name is not mentioned as producer. There were a ton of rumors going around that Bryan Cranston was going to be Lex Luthor. It seems to be that those are now being debunked.
Really?
And that Cranston might not be Lex Luthor. I think that'd be a damn shame. I don't know.
Yeah,
I've
never seen Breaking Bad.
Oh my god!
But I saw.
Oh my god!
I have to be very, very. Hey, look, I am just finally watching Deadwood.
I still haven't watched that one, but yeah, I about a year and a half ago, year and a half ago, I mainlined Breaking Bad.
Uh-huh.
And Bryan Cranston, he plays a cancer patient,
right.
So he's going through chemo, so he has to, at one point he takes the action to, instead of letting his hair fall out, he shaves his head, and holy crap. Watching him come out, it's like, you can be my Lex Luthor anytime.
Yeah.
Oh man. And just the character he plays in Breaking Bad is so dark and sociopathic. It's just like he cooks meth to make money to help his family because he's dying. This clearly is the story of a man named Walter White who believes he has cancer, shaves his head, makes a bunch of money making meth, makes terrible decisions and gets people killed and kills people and does terrible things, and then gets cured of cancer, moves to Metropolis, and becomes Lex Luthor.
Why not? Why not?
I'm fine with that. If Breaking Bad is the origin story of Lex Luthor.
There you go.
I'm done.
I like that.
I'm spent.
Yeah. That's awesome.
The last point I wanted to make is I have been an apologist for Ben Affleck for probably going on 15 years now.
Uh-huh.
I love his work. Funny story. Somebody actually on the podcast emailed and said I sounded like Ben Affleck, which I thought was just hilarious because I've never seen that or heard it myself. I've often said I'm going to call Jennifer Garner to see if she can tell the difference.
Yeah.
But I really like his work. I can see that a lot of it he has, and he's known for making a good movie, then making a paycheck, then making a good movie, then making another paycheck. They make fun of that in Kevin Smith movies. That arrogant, ridiculous look he can have on his face. They made fun of it in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. There was a movie poster that was a play on Moonraker, and the movie was Moonraper. And he's got this stupid look on his face doing this. But then Ben Affleck starts directing movies and directs these wonderful, dark, just really well put together movies. And if this is Warner Brothers' sly, subtle way of getting Ben Affleck involved in their DC movie universe just so they can spin him and get him to direct a Batman movie that will be the first really good detective-y Batman movie, I think that's brilliant. I would love to see Ben Affleck direct a Batman movie after the three movies I've seen him direct so far. And I even know the story, the book that I would hand him and say, this is the movie you need to direct. There's a novel written by an activist lawyer by the name of Andrew Vox. He's a lawyer. He wears an eye patch. He's been on Oprah. He's an activist for children who've been abused or neglected, things like that. He wrote a Batman story called The Ultimate Evil. It's a novel, and I highly recommend it. And it's a fairly short read, too. But it's the story of Batman breaking up a ring of child sex slavers who they're kidnapping, you know, little American children, shipping them overseas to become sex slaves. So it's an incredibly dark story. And there's a scene in it where Batman hands a gun, or there's a woman who realizes that the man she's with has been doing this, and she's got a gun, and Batman just walks out of the room. And it's like, whoa.
I hate to, you know what that just reminded me of? This is we were talking about great casting choices on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this fan film that I'd never heard of, and they got Thomas Jane and Ron Perlman to do this. It's called Dirty Laundry.
That's Thomas Jane. Yep.
Thomas Jane. Thank you. Thomas Jane.
Yes.
and Ron Perlman appear in this. It's a 10-minute film called The Punisher, Dirty Laundry.
Yes.
I had never seen this. I never heard of it. And now you talk about a movie that needs some serious love. I loved the reboot that they did with Thomas Jane of The Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great. And I think the problem with The Punisher, just as a quick tangent, was that people were expecting a superhero movie. And I'm like, oh, no. Frank Castle is not a superhero.
No.
He is a vigilante. He is the worst vigilante of his kind.
Yep.
And this is a revenge movie.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It just happens to be made by Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was that in this short film, he says to the guy after he beats the hell out of this drug lord pimp or whatever, he goes, you know what the difference is between justice and punishment? And then he's covered the guy in alcohol and he lights the lighter and just leaves it lit and sets it in front of him and then walks away. And, you know, and then this prostitute that this guy had just earlier in this film had just brutally raped mm-hmm. shows up. And I'm like, are they going to go there? And it was just, this sounds wow. I could see Affleck doing that. I could see Affleck's Batman just cocking the gun, putting it in front of a woman and saying, your call.
Yeah.
And just walks out.
Yeah. I'm out. You do whatever you need to do.
Wow.
It's and this is definitely one of those movies that the boom cannot be around for.
Gotcha.
But Gone Baby Gone, highly recommend it.
Okay.
I think Ben Affleck made the right choice in not being in the movie, and just being the director, just being behind the camera, and it's fantastic. If she loves the town the way you say she does, I'm sure she'll be all in for this once you tell her that Ben directed.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. She's so. Probably already seen it. I mean, Pip's one of those rare writers that she can have a movie playing in the background and she can still get in a word count and have the movie playing in the background. I get too sucked into it. So,
yeah.
I
understand.
Yeah. Well, this was a good conversation, and you know, as people said, yeah, it's gonna if T and Tony are talking, it's gonna go long.
Yeah. You know, and I mentioned before that I've got an extended vacation coming up, so kind of need material to fill in the gaps.
Oh, there you go. How convenient.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, it was a pleasure being on the podcast, and. And good to air the Punisher's dirty laundry about Batman.
There you go. All right, thanks, T, and see everybody else next time.
Oh, you bet. Take it easy.
See ya.